Good morning. I hope you're having a fine sunny morning. Welcome back to another edition of Miami Valley Voices on this Cox radio station. I'm your host, Ron Rollins from the Dayton Daily News, and we're here to celebrate April, which is National Poetry Month. And we have one of my favorite local poets in the house with us this morning, Grace Curtis. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks, Ron. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. Thanks for being here. So last year, to mark National Poetry Month, we had a friend of ours, Fred Kirchner, in, who we both know. You probably know Fred better than I do. I haven't really actually seen him since I had him in the studio last year. And he runs the Gem City Poetry Stage in Oakwood, which is kind of like a local end of, it's last Sunday of the month, I think, reading.
Right, right.
A place in Oakwood, and we like the idea of bringing a local poet and talking about poetry and reminding people like what it is, why it's out there, and how to get into it. Your most recent book is The Shape of a Box, which came out when and who published it?
It came out in May of 2014, and that was published by Dos Madres Press in Cincinnati.
Excellent. And let's talk a little bit about why poetry. I mean, there's so many kinds of things writers can write. How did you end up doing what you do?
Well, that's a good question.
Okay.
I've written poetry my whole life, even as a child.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that, you know, maybe a second or third grade teacher showed us a poem in one of our books, and I was just ecstatic about it. I memorized it and started writing my own little poetry. And I went through high school and wrote some, and I went through college, got a degree in English, and wrote some poetry. And then I just kind of got away from it. You know, as you do, you get on with your life. You've got to make a living.
And you can't make a living as a poet.
No, you cannot.
Billy Collins, maybe.
Sure.
But other than that, for most of you,
So you know, I just got away from it. Mm-hmm. And then maybe in around 2004, 2005, I was getting ready for work one day, and a line of poetry went through my head, and I thought, where did that come from?
That's interesting.
I really hadn't even read much.
Did you write it down right away?
Or I did. I did. I went right to the computer, sat down, wrote that line out, wrote some more, and I thought, wow, I'm writing a poem after all these years.
Yeah.
And I just kept writing. I came home that night. I edited it. I started writing more.
Right.
I just never stopped.
Now, do you write every day?
I do. And, I write or read or mostly write.
And do you write things other than poetry as well? Or
I do. I write some prose. Mm-hmm. I write what I call lyric essays.
Oh, now what would be the definition of a lyric essay?
A lyric essay is very almost like poetry written in prose form.
Mm-hmm.
And it tends to be almost meditative. It tends to be memoir in some cases. That's mostly what I write.
So where do ideas and inspirations come from for your poetry?
Well, that's interesting. It's interesting because it you can never tell. Just driving down the street, you'll see something and it's inspiring to you, and you know, it may even be something that somebody says to you in the grocery, and suddenly you're, you know, out in your car. I have a series of poems called "Written on the Backs of Speedway Gas Receipts."
Some of which are in the book,
In the book, and those were poems that, you know, you grab a piece of paper. I'm not disciplined enough always to have that at my hand, those tablets, you know.
Right.
So you grab a piece of paper and you have only the length and width of a gas receipt.
Uh-huh.
And that's where the poem goes.
I was going to ask about that because I didn't, when you talk about discipline, I mean, there is a certain amount of discipline that sort of comes with any kind of regular writing craft, but you say you're not that disciplined. I mean, it sounds like you are. I mean...
Well, I try to have a notebook with me, you know, in my purse, but sometimes you can't grab it, or you've left it on your desk at home, and so you just sort of, you don't know where inspiration is going to strike, so you just kind of grab whatever you've got. But, you know, a lot of people will carry a notebook with them 24/7 almost.
Right. I have never been able to teach myself to do that. I'm good on a pen and a piece of paper in my pocket usually, but even as a journalist, I usually have a notebook with me, but I always have a piece of paper. The notebook sometimes fails. So how much revision goes into the work? I mean, describe the process for people who aren't writers. They may not have a sense of the difference between catching the lightning in the bottle, like, oh, I nailed that line, that good, and then to where you consider it a finished piece. Right. Talk about that process.
Well, you know, it's interesting because some poems come really quickly.
Right.
But it depends on how much time I've put into thinking about them before I sit down. Mm-hmm. And usually that's how it starts. I'll start with a nugget of an idea, and I'll just keep thinking about it and thinking about it. I'll twist it around in my head and mm-hmm. turn it upside down and, you know, compare it to things. So if I have thought about something for a long time before I sit down, it will come pretty quickly, and then the revision is a lot of looking for, you know, action verbs versus, and then I'll look for stronger language, better words, and those kinds of things. So that's the kind of revision I do.
How do you know when you're done? Which is the question with any creative process.
Well, that's interesting because what we ask ourselves often is, are we done or did we abandon it?
I really like that.
And sometimes you abandon them and they still get published. That doesn't mean they're not good.
Right.
But there's this sense in you that maybe they weren't quite finished.
Right.
Sometimes they just feel finished, done.
Most of the writing I do is journalistic, and so abandonment isn't usually an issue. You know, it's like, I need that story now,
right.
You know, and there's a deadline. And so it's definitely more craft than art. You know, I mean, you're just pounding it out, something that you want to be understandable and readable and simple. But the revision happens on the fly within that framework, you know. So the idea of abandoning something and then, but still not being done with it, actually,
right,
is an interesting idea. So can you attach percentages to this? I mean, how many poems do you abandon that you and do you go back to something years later?
Yeah, sure.
I talked with Herb Martin at UD once about this, and a wonderful
great
local poet, and he's the, people may know him as the gentleman that used to do the Paul Laurence Dunbar readings and impressions, and when he was younger, and
he still does that.
He still does. Yeah. Well, I guess he still does. I haven't seen him do them in a long time, but he talked about never being done with a poem. That even after it's been published, he considers it still something that he can go in and mess around with a little bit if he feels like it. And he says it's not like a novel or a movie. I can still go in and play.
Sure.
Even after it's been received by the world in a printed form. And he'll talk about going back years later and reworking stuff, which is kind of cool.
You can do that.
But
yes,
a little scary,
absolutely.
Too. Yeah, yeah.
I forget, some poet said that the work is done when you're dead. You know, the poem is finished when you're dead.
Yeah.
So there is that.
That is a deadline.
Right.
Yeah.
But I tend to, at a certain point, what happens with me is I just want to move on.
Right.
And so I tend not to go back years later and revise things. You certainly can. Mm-hmm. It's your work. Mm-hmm. And most of the time you own all the rights to it. So
right. Yeah.
Unless there's a certain circumstance that you don't, you can still revise it. But
sure.
What's out there in the world is going to be what it was.
Right. Talk about the publication of your book a little bit. So is publishing poetry a different kind of game than other sorts of publication?
It is.
People may be familiar with
it. It really is. I mean, to publish a book of poetry, most first books of poetry are published via poetry contests.
Okay.
Most publishers,
which are done by the publishing house.
Right.
Okay.
Most publishers will run. And right now, and we were talking just a little bit beforehand, that poetry's not what it used to be, but actually, most poetry contests will run between 500 to 900 manuscripts.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a very, very competitive process.
I guess before we turn the mics on, we were talking a little bit about, as you mentioned, like, you know, the sort of the state of poetry today.
Right.
And And we should get back to the publication in a second. I guess the what I had said was that it was it's not like like in 1900 where like newspapers and magazines and mainstream publishing of poetry is like commonplace and it's everywhere and every it seems like it's become more narrow cast and a little more not obscure but a little more narrow casted. What's the state of it? Do you feel like as well, somebody who's working in it, what do you think?
Years ago, you know, poetry was a form of entertainment. It was oral and, you know, people listened to it that was their entertainment. Today, there is still some of that, but poetry is competing with so many other, you know, entertainment options, television, movies, and... But that said, more poetry is being written today. There are more... people who call themselves poets, and more people are writing poetry than ever before.
The web has certainly helped, right?
Yes, I mean, it has helped.
Poetry Foundation and all, there's all kinds of wonderful websites where you can get a new poem every day or even or dozens of new poems every day.
Yes, that is true. Yeah, and I subscribe to like at least three of those.
Right, yes, I mean. Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's kind of a paradox or it's different because there's all this poetry being written, and yet it you're right, there's a narrower audience, and the audience unfortunately tends to be mostly poets.
That's an interesting
other
idea.
Poets. Huh. So you have you know, a lot of people who are writing poetry, and but most of the people who are reading it are also writing it.
That's interesting. Does that affect the stuff that's being written, do you think?
Well, it can. I think it does. But you'll often hear a poet referred to, for example, as a poet's poet.
Yeah.
And that stuff tends to be, that kind of poetry, that stuff, that kind of poetry tends to be, you know, sometimes that's poetry that's a little more difficult and obscure and probably doesn't have a lot of general appeal.
Right.
So you have sort of the whole gamut of poetry that is written on a spectrum of poetry that is what we call accessible versus some that's less accessible and a little more complex.
So, and I want to finish the thought about your book before we get back to accessibility, because I do want to talk about that. So, you were mentioning that most poetry books today are published as an outgrowth of a contest that a publisher will run, and that there are plenty of submissions to the contest. What happened in your case?
Well, in my case, you know, I went to a conference, and a really great poet from Chicago named Kathleen Rooney said to me, we were talking about all the contests, because you have to pay anywhere from $15 to $25 to enter those contests. So it can get very expensive. Sure. I did a whole year of that in advance. And she said to me, think about it, Grace, you probably already know your publisher. Work that and think about that.
And by that, she meant that you...
She meant that, you know, use my contacts, think about who I know, think about the poets that I... have worked with then who's published them and contact some of those.
Okay.
So I actually had written several reviews for Dos Madres.
Okay.
They publish several volumes a year from primarily, they would be considered a regional press, primarily from the Cincinnati, Dayton, but not always. I mean, they publish really from across the U.S., but
they do lots of books.
They do a lot of books. And so I sent an inquiry letter, which most poets don't do. I sent an inquiry letter to the editor and talked to him about the poetry and what I was trying to accomplish in it and sent him some samples. And he said, he wrote back to me and said, send me the whole manuscript.
That's cool.
And
that's
then you have
really
to kind of wait. Yeah, that was very nice. But then there's this agonizing waiting game, which all writers, poets, and novelists and alike wait.
And that, which actually kind of like puts people off sometimes. It's like, I don't want to play that game.
It does. You know, it's
That's
very trying.
So then, so you scored.
I scored.
That's cool.
Yeah. Robert wrote back and said, we'd very much like to publish your book. And
excellent.
I was, you know,
Hashtag yay Grace.
Yay.
That's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
That's excellent. We should tell people what you're listening to. If you're just tuning in, this is Miami Valley Voices This Morning on this Cox radio station. Welcome. I'm your host, Ron Rollins, and we are in the studio with Grace Curtis, a Dayton area poet whose book, The Shape of a Box, I'm sorry, came out in 2014. It is National Poetry Month. Welcome to April. And so we're talking about the printed word in verse form. So talk about accessibility a little bit. A lot of people sort of feel like, oh, poetry, I don't understand poetry. And that's fine. I mean, that's true of a lot of different kinds of art. A lot of people feel like they don't understand red wine, you know.
Right.
What would you tell them? Where's a good place to start, and what would you suggest?
Well, what I would suggest is go to a website. For example, go to the Poetry Foundation website. That's a great place to start.
That's a very good website, yeah.
And
there's
just
thousands of poems on there. Yeah.
Thousands. And on any topic or any, you know, a variety written by poets from across the country. And
do you have the app on your phone?
I do.
The app is great.
Exactly.
The app will spin to the kind of poetry they like, humor and fantasy or something like that, or love poetry. And if you spin it, and it'll end up on a topic, and then it'll give you all kinds of poetry in that category that you like. So go from there.
Exactly. And you can find, I would start by just trying to read some of the poems that you see there. And it does take a little patience, even accessible poems. I mean, you can read a poem that's what we consider toward the end of, you know, toward the spectrum of being close to, you know, a greeting card verse.
Sure.
You can read that kind of poetry, and that might be immediately accessible to you.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people like the idea that the poetry is going to challenge them a little bit.
Right.
That there's some things that it's often said that you should read a poem. Every time you read that poem, you should get something new from it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what a lot of poets are striving for.
Right.
You want a poem that, you know, is interesting and surprising, that really kind of breaks up your idea of, you know, of reality even.
Right.
So
it makes you work a little bit.
It makes you work for it.
Right.
You, and I think most poets want to strive toward that end and reading that kind of poetry.
One of my favorite local poets is Chris DeVasia, who teaches out at Wright State University.
Yeah.
And I met him last year at the Antioch Writers Workshop in Yellow Springs, and he taught some of the poetry classes there. And the reason I like his poetry is because I usually don't get it.
Right.
I usually don't understand it. He's an amazingly gifted writer, but his brain is kind of somewhere over here, and when I read some of his poems, I'm like, I think I know what's going on, but I'm not quite sure, which makes me like it even more, because I mentioned every time you read it, there should be something new that emerges from it. That's definitely the case, because it's really difficult to penetrate, but it's also fun on the page. And so now your stuff is, I think, pretty accessible. I mean your stuff is it does what you said it should do, I think, for it to be a good poem, but I don't find it mysterious or difficult to get something from. Is that your goal? I mean,
well, not necessarily. I mean, I don't, you know, I think you get to a point where you stop trying to make the poem be something. You start writing, and you know that the poem is what the poem is.
Right.
I mean, if that's kind of the track that you take with it, and you know, and that's sort of how you write.
Right.
You know, there are things though that I will do to intentionally introduce some of that disjuncture. We call it disjuncture,
sure.
And
right.
To kind of parse against the grain on
right,
it.
Right.
But I think most serious poets would be striving to write poetry that not necessarily doesn't mean anything. I mean, it doesn't necessarily, you can't just say this poem is about.
Right.
You know, there was recently a discussion on Facebook with some poetry friends of mine where they were talking about poems that are relatable, are sometimes, those are very accessible, but those are sometimes what kind of makes the hair on the back of the neck of a poet go up, because they don't really want that. They're striving for something that's really different, really standing out.
Well, I guess what I meant a moment ago was, for example, you mentioned the Gastrostes poems. I mean, the way you present those in the book as like, these are clearly poems that have been written on the back of Gastrostes. That right there sort of gives the reader a clue about kind of what's coming a little bit. I mean, that's a kind of accessibility where it's like, well, this is going to be short, and it's going to be kind of a slice of life, possibly like something I saw while I had a gas receipt in my hand, which tells you kind of going into that cluster of poems, sort of what to expect and what you might get out of it, and then you're pleased when you get that. So I guess that's what I meant. I mean, they're not obscure. I mean, it's like, right, here's what I'm doing, you know. And I think that is a kind of accessibility that works and makes people feel happy, I think, and respond to the poems.
Right. And then I think what I tried to do with those poems, once you get into them, you see they're very fanciful and surreal. They're right. Not, you know, here was such and such and here was such
right,
and
right,
such
right,
at, the,
right.
at the gas station. They're actually...
They go someplace. Yeah, they definitely go someplace. Yeah.
They're not just... they're not just poems written on the back of a gas station. They're poems at a gas station.
Right, right, right.
In the gas station.
Right, right. And I like that. I like that series. There's like six or seven of them in the book, I think.
Right, It's interesting. The one, for example, actually how those came about was I wasn't even in the gas station. I was sitting across from somebody in the meeting.
Oh, really?
And he had this gorgeous tie on, this beautiful tie and this beautiful suit. Yeah. And that's the first poem in that series that I wrote. And then I just started writing from there.
That's cool. What would you say in terms of general themes that you try to bring to your work?
My poems tend to be kind of about life, and I know that sounds like a cop out. That's kind of
not
general, but it's kind of, you know, I find day to day life just amazingly intriguing. You know, the people you meet, the things you see,
sure.
You know, they just for me, it just has to be captured somehow, you know, and you have to just. I think that's what my poetry
represents.
Cool.
In terms of speaking of accessibility, you mentioned before we turn on the mics about a project that you and some fellow poet friends are about to embark on that sounds like you're taking poetry to the people. I mean,
well, we're trying.
That sounds really
exactly.
Interesting. Talk about that project.
Well, it's called Poems in a Flash, and we're working on finalizing our arrangements to be at the Austin Landing Market, the new market
cool.
That's going to set up there this summer. And we're going to take our typewriters out. We've done this in some other venues. We were at the Oakwood Farmers Market one year.
Man.
We
oh,
were
cool.
at the Downtown Dayton Library one year. And or
who's the
one
group?
Time.
Who's
it's
the group?
It's we're primarily poets from the Wright Library group that meets once a month.
In Oakwood on Friday.
In Oakwood.
Yeah, right. And how big a group is that?
That's a fairly large group. It's about 20 people who are in the group, but maybe it's a much smaller group that comes to the monthly meetings.
Is it all writers, or is it people who also are fans of the writing?
No,
or
it's writers.
Okay, it's a
workshop format.
Okay.
You bring poetry, and they workshop the poetry.
Okay.
So this group, again, modeled after the Chicago group that I know and have been following. They go out and they write poetry on demand, and you give people a piece of paper and let them fill in a few details.
Yeah.
And they're doing it for donations, for like a $5 donation.
That's
for
neat.
The group. The Wright Library Poets actually published a book of poetry of the people in the group.
I don't think I knew that.
That was last summer.
Okay.
I
knew that. Oh,
yeah.
That's cool. I was one time in the Oregon District. I was walking down the street with some friends. It was Friday or Saturday night. And this guy kind of walks up to us and says, "Give me a dollar for one of my poems." I'm like, here's a dollar. What are you talking about? And he's like, here. And he had done some small Xerox copies of his poems, like on about 4x6 pieces of paper, and they weren't very good, but I was like, well, okay, here,
sure.
here's, I'm like, do I get to choose? He's like, no, I choose. I'm like,
well, bless you for doing
okay.
buying one.
So I gave him a dollar, my friend gave him a dollar, and we got two different poems, and he's like, do you like it? And I'm like, yeah, sure, you know, it's fine. I've never seen the guy again. He was early middle-aged, bearded guy, just walking on Fifth Street, and I've thought, like, later on, I was like, why don't more people do that? It's
exactly,
a great idea.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't know how much money he made, but he got $2 off us.
Yeah. Well, we're hoping to kind of, you know, expand on that and take poetry out. I've written poems for people's anniversaries. I wrote one for the balloon man that was at the farmer's market.
That's
and
cool.
You know, just a variety, whatever the topic is.
So people will come to you with the topic.
Right.
There'll be five or six of you sitting there.
Right.
got your laptops out and it'll be like, just go.
No, typewriters.
Typewriters. You did say typewriters.
Typewriters. Manual typewriters.
Oh, you did not
typewriters.
Misspeak. Well, actually, because you had to be able to pull it out and hand it to the person.
Exactly. You had errors and all. I mean, whiteout and all, or scratch overs.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if I still even have it. I guess I have an old Smith Corona somewhere.
There you go. Yeah, wow. You could join us.
I would love
to join
you. That'd be great.
I know. I'm actually thinking of a group that could do like a short story.
Oh, yeah.
A paragraph, two or three paragraphs of a short story on someone's topic as well.
Yeah. This sounds like those writing exercises where like a writer will write a chapter and then pass it to the next and then to the next and the next on down the line. Yeah. And then,
well, we do that with poetry and it's called Exquisite Corpse.
Right, right.
The Exquisite Corpse exercise.
And I've never known where that name comes from, but I should look it up. The interwebbies will help me with
that.
I'm
don't
sure.
know either.
But when is this going to happen?
Well, it would be this summer. On Saturday mornings, the market is running from 8 to noon on Saturday mornings. We won't be at all of the events because it takes a lot to staff that, and we don't want to set people's expectations up and then not be able to meet that.
Right, right.
So we're still picking our dates out, but it will be in the Saturday mornings.
Excellent. We got a couple minutes left. Do you have a poem you want to read?
Sure.
And we have about 3 minutes. We have about 2.5, 3 minutes. Let's make this short.
Okay.
Okay.
I will read Wordsplay.
All right.
She speaks, fingers on the tone holes of her clarinet, breathy woos coaxing chords into controlled motion. We form our G's and D's, our F's, our K's, comed, comed, a period, a question in the ease of a breath. I have seen a word, the word. A whirl, the lift of a staff, part the sea, construct a wall, form a pillar, cause a lamb to acquiesce. I have seen a word quiet, a word, splitting a tongue into the splitting of words. I have seen words escape from your sleep, your deep, your words that would stop a train, derailed, a failed engine, an engineer, a failed trip, a split rail. I have seen my words buzz around my head like killer bees, cross the tract of no man's land, the DMZ, push themselves into tremors, my cavity coaxing the round of an O, the WH of Y. Even a chirping baby will push his pink tongue in and out, trying to wet the reed of his clarinet. The yogi master says to place the tongue softly against the roof of your mouth to keep the rabid mind from speaking out, from forming the glottal vowels of worry, from jumping with the lingual jump rope on the long journey toward the faraway place of your absolute, toward becoming your perfect dumb self.
Wow, that's cool. That was neat. What was the title again?
Wordsplay.
I like that. We're out of time. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, it's National Poetry Month, and I hope folks will do something with that.
Right.
You know,
write or read a poem.
Share a poem with a friend. And we've been in the studio with Grace Curtis. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Absolutely. This has been Miami Valley Voices. This is Ron Rollins, your host. We'll be back next week. And I don't know, maybe I'll play around this month. Maybe I'll bring in a poet every Sunday. That would be kind of cool. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Hope to see you here next week. Tune in. Have a great day.